Blog Talk Radio.
This isn't the Matrix.
No. It's another training program designed to teach you one thing. If you are not one of us, you are one of them.
What are they?
Sentient programs. They can move in and out of any software still hardwired to their system. That means that anyone we haven't unplugged is potentially an agent. Inside the Matrix, they are everyone, and they are no one.
We have survived by hiding from them, by running from them. But they are the gatekeepers. They are guarding all the doors, they are holding all the keys, which means that sooner or later, someone is going to have to fight them.
Someone.
I won't lie to you, Neo. Every single man or woman who has stood their ground, everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
Why?
I've seen an agent punch through a concrete wall. Men have emptied entire clips at them and hit nothing but air. Yet their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong or as fast as you can be.
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
Okay, gentlemen, can you hear me? Okay,
hello,
Mr. Walker?
This is him.
Okay, sorry to keep you waiting. We had difficulties getting on. Again, our apologies. I don't know if that has anything to do with the storm or the tech, but everything just went blank on us. So, again, we apologize. Welcome to the comic shop. Let me see if I can get my cohorts, our band of characters. Captain, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Terrific. Okay, were you able to access the board?
Now, just now, before I wasn't.
Just now. Okay, our whole show was screwed up.
Yeah.
No intros, nothing, right?
No, nothing.
These things happen. Once again, to our listening audience, this is the Comic Shop. You know we had this Frankenstorm on the East Coast, so these things do happen. Again, Mr. Walker, we appreciate you coming on the show, and our apologies for the technical difficulties. Let me bring Daryl B. in here as well. I'm glad he's patient as well.
Howdy, guys.
Daryl.
It's nice to have Mr. Walker on. Thanks, guys.
Yes, oh, definitely.
Back.
Let's start from scratch. We're all professionals here. Mr. Walker.
Yes.
We approached you because we thought that your work with Number 13, courtesy of Dark Horse Comics, was excellent. So if you can, and much needed, walk us through – well, first of all, walk us through a little bit of your history in the comic book industry. How did you get started, and how did you come up being at Dark Horse Comics?
Well, I mean, like so many other people, I've been reading comics my whole life. And but I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm one of 10 black people who live here. And so I've been here for a long time, and Dark Horse Comics happens to be located, well, they used to be located here in Portland. Now they're in one of the suburbs. But just through running in the same social circles over the years, I got to know a lot of people in the comics industry, and guys like Bob Schreck, who used to work at Dark Horse. He went on to be one of the founders of Oni. Then he was an editor at DC. Bob is a really good friend of mine and something of a mentor. And then I started publishing my own stuff in the 90s, back when everyone was doing their own zine, and got to know a lot of the indie comics guys and was always trying to get comic stories up and running. But that's never that easy to do. And then along the way, I just started meeting a lot of other creators. So I've kind of been that guy, if you ask around, I've been that guy who everybody knows, and I was always at the parties and always at the conventions, and everyone's like, well, what exactly have you done? And it was always primarily a lot of self-published stuff. And so I'm one of those 20-year overnight successes, I guess.
Yeah. The Chris Giarrusso thing, that we know that one well.
Yeah, yeah. And then go on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I was going to say, and then I got to know Jeremy and Robert Love, the Love Brothers, years ago. And so between the three of us, we were always talking about collaborating on stuff. And then Robert and I started collaborating on some stuff maybe 5 years ago. And that stuff got published in some anthologies by Image. And then he had this new project called Number 13 that he was drawing, but he wasn't comfortable with writing it. So he asked me if I would come on board and help him co-write it, and that got into Dark Horse Presents when Dark Horse announced they were going to relaunch that title, which used to be their flagship title. And so I said, sure. And then that proved to be popular enough, and then from there, Dark Horse offered us a miniseries. So that's the short version of it. The long one is lots of tears and wondering if I'm doing the right thing by being a writer.
Now, I tell you something. I saw this at Comic Book Resources. I was unfamiliar with it until I saw the preview. And the preview was just so attractive. When I first saw this, I said, okay, this is cinematic almost. Has there been any feelers about any cinematic options on this story?
It's not that I'm aware of, but that doesn't mean there isn't. I'm letting Robert kind of handle all that sort of stuff because he's as the creator. I mean, we're sort of co-creators on it, but this is initially his idea. I'm letting him handle all that sort of stuff. But you know, Dark Horse has a long reputation of getting involved with projects that they believe in have a life outside of comics, and obviously they've done. You know, they're the publishers of Hellboy, Sin City. Barbed Wire, which maybe people don't like to talk about that much, but you know, now they've got the Goon, and the Goon is sort of in various stages of development. And you know, when I'm working on a project, I tend to just think of it for the medium that it's in. I don't like to think, oh, this would make a great movie or whatever, or a video game or a TV show, because that just sort of dilutes the whole process that I get into when I'm creating. I try to create specifically for the medium that I'm writing for in that moment. And then if something happens afterwards, that's great. And if we all get paid, even better, you know. But I try not to worry about that stuff too much.
Yes, sir. In the interest of full disclosure, last week when AfroNerd brought it up, I went like, yeah, if this is very successful and it gets to be a movie, you know, like so many comic projects are, it would be interesting because you don't have quite the normal type protagonist that you see in normal comic books. And we appreciate that because you are thinking, you and the Love Brothers are thinking outside the box on this. And we constantly look for fresh new things, and I would say this counts as a fresh new thing.
Well, thank you. That's, you know, Robert and I talk about this all the time because, you know, this goes back to my childhood reading comics. You know, I was a Marvel kid growing up, you know, and I loved Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, Thor. I loved all those titles, but there was always something lacking for me, and that was primarily protagonists that I could identify with on a real gut level, you know. And so I was always looking especially for black characters that I could relate to. And unfortunately, there weren't a lot of them. And in the indie world, there's you know, a fair number of black creators, but they're trying to do stuff that is, I'm trying to think the best way to put it really is what Dwayne McDuffie always used to say. And I was blessed to know Dwayne before he passed away. And Dwayne always said he was always concerned with creating interesting characters first and foremost, and that their color and their gender would always be secondary. And that's what Robert and I were really talking about. It's like, let's make some really interesting characters first and foremost, and then by nature of who we are, we try to give them more diversity than we would normally see in traditional comics. Because I don't believe that the comics industry is reflective of the fan base who's there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we definitely know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because
obviously, well,
that's the reason why we created this project. And again, we're normally far more professional. That's why I'm a little analytical about how our beginning was. That's that's neither here nor there. But we were also fortunate enough to interview the late great Dwayne McDuffie, and we're glad to hear from you gentlemen, because we were very upset with the fact that McDuffie was so passionate about bringing black imagery to the comic book and animated world. And we were wondering who was going to pick up the baton after this, because we are in dire need to see these images. So when I first visually saw number 13, the child android or cyborg,
yeah.
I was like, okay, this is something. You know, you're so accustomed to not seeing that image that when you do see it, it's like, whoa, this is. I already see. I know you're not really talking about the cinematic part of it, but I already see Jaden Smith. Although he might be too. That's how far ahead the geeks are. I already see Jaden Smith in that role, just coincidentally.
Yeah. Well, you know,
well, at least somebody voicing it.
Yeah, it's and again, it goes down to the thing I loved about Dwayne and his writing was that he was just, again, he always made interesting characters. And my belief is this, is that if the characters aren't interesting, like what their gender, their race, any of those things, become insignificant after a time. The problem is that most people have this concept that in order for a character to be interesting, they have to be white, which isn't true. And it's why, you know, if you're looking at like sort of the nerd culture, you look at Star Trek and it's like, you know, Ben Sisko is the most interesting captain in all of the Star Trek captains, you know? And if there's a reason why he resonates, especially with a lot of black fans, because it's like he's just a cool character. I mean, Avery Brooks brought something special to him, but he was a cool character no matter what. And then they cast a black guy, and it brings a whole extra dimension. And that's sort of how my philosophy with every character I go into is like, if he's just not cool, then nobody's going to buy into him. You know what I'm saying? And if he's cool and he's black and someone doesn't buy into him, they're just a racist, and I can't deal with them anyway. So you know what I mean?
Well, Avery Brooks, he goes back to Vegas. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any cooler than him.
No, it definitely doesn't. He's and I'm not sure why. Maybe he's choosing not to work. That's what I'd like to think. He's choosing not to work as much as he could. But, I mean, I'd love to see him come back and do something real special.
Well, we're going to put the feelers out to get him on as well, because he teaches at, I believe, at Rutgers in Jersey. So he's teaching, I think. One of our crew would like to ask you a question as well. Captain Kirk, obviously, if you see what the theme is going with us, Mr. Walker. Captain, you have a question.
This is the captain speaking, yes. Now, the number 13 is supposed to be a number of manifestation in numerology. Also, you hear them talking about 2013.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 13 is supposed to be manifestation. I was very interested, you know, in the dynamic process which you call in this 13. What led to that process?
You know, unfortunately, since Robert's not here, he's the one to answer that question, because when he came to me, he said, I've got this character. It's called, his name's number 13. This is what he's looked like. You want to write it? I was like, okay. I never thought about it above and beyond that. And now that you're asking, it's like, oh, maybe I should ask him if there was some significance to this or not. So I honestly that's a great question. And I don't have an answer for it other than I don't know.
Well, also ask him, was he like a fan of like Cyborg 7 or Cyborg 9, that manga from, I think it was Toriyama that did it. People correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a lot of, from the looks of it, you guys are exploring a lot of the same themes that are going through that, like, am I human? What's a family?
what's my identity? You could see all of this with your character in the first couple of previews and the first issue of the Dark Horse Presents that I've picked up in a long time because of this. So I'm like, just knock on Robert's door and say, were you a fan of Cyborg 9? I'm curious to find out because he gets a lot of the same themes here.
Yeah, I can't say for sure Cyborg 9. I mean, I've got a couple of Cyborg 9 collections here. And I know that he's, like me, he's a fan of some of the older, manga stuff. For me, it was like the old Star Blazers and shows like that that I grew up watching as a kid that sort of informed me. What I brought to the story, or what I was trying to get into was, I was actually really influenced by Pinocchio, the original Pinocchio story, not just the Disney version, and that concept of, again, trying to find your own humanity, trying to define what family is, and really just trying to put some sort of classic mythological structure to the story so that it would be something that people would be able to relate to on a lot of levels, which we all tend to at times, wanting to find our father. And that goes back to a conversation I had with Dwayne McDuffie actually years ago when we were talking about who our favorite superheroes were and who the best black superheroes were, that sort of thing. And he always said that he felt that that Thor was the most universally black superhero at Marvel. And which sounds really funny, right? Because he's a Norse god and he's got blonde hair and blue eyes and he doesn't look anything like a brother or anything. But Dwayne's theory was that all Thor was about a guy who had a bad relationship with his father and was trying to reconcile, this relationship with his father, trying to make things right. And he was like, and he said that was every black kid he knew growing up, including himself. And I was like, I'd never thought about it that way, but when he put it that way, it was like, okay, that is part of what always made the dynamic of Thor really interesting, right? And that's when I realized that if your characters are universal enough, again, it doesn't matter as much what they look like, but then if you can give people something that they can relate to, it makes it all the more better. If it's something other than the traditional white guy who's, that we see all the time.
Again, to our listening audience, this is the Comic Shop. It's presented by AFNA Radio. Our Grindhouse Sundays, we had a false start, unfortunately. We were speaking to Mr. David Walker of number 13, Dark Horse Comics. Mr. Walker, you were talking about this theme with the fatherhood deal with Thor. That theme seems to run through this work as well, your work on this as well. Was that intentional? Is there an allegory here with 13 looking for his father / creator? Was that also intentional?
It was intentional on my end, and I think maybe that was just me sort of resolving some of what I'm, my own personal neuroses. But I think that it's we have a tendency, a lot of us go through our lives trying to either emulate our parents, trying to make our parents happy, or just trying to figure out what our parents were all about. And so in the case of number 13, he's not even sure what he is or what he's looking for. And so that's really what the story is about. It's about him. He thinks he's looking for his father, but that's really not what he's looking for, because that's not what any of us are looking for. It doesn't matter if your father left or your mother left or whatever. What you're really looking for is your place in the world, is trying to define your role. The more that I write, the more I find myself returning to that same story over and over again, which is about the individual trying to define themselves in their existence when there's so many external forces trying to define who you are. And in terms of the black experience in America, that is the black experience in America, is that it's been this constant struggle for us to identify who we are when much of what we know about ourselves has been told to us by other people. We have a limited understanding of our history above and beyond, servitude. And so it's constantly trying to figure out who and what you're supposed to be when everything else is telling you, no, this is all you're supposed to be. And that, in that regard, that's like my life story, you know. So, and that's like, I'm still exploring that from a slightly, you know, I guess you could call it like an Afrocentric point of view, because we don't get those stories that much, especially within the mediums that we're talking about, comics, science fiction. That's the realm of white heroes predominantly. But it's also the story of our existence, I believe, anyway, so, or at least myself, my existence.
I see that one of our friends from the UK, Stanley Kubrick, that's, of course, that's not the real Stanley Kubrick. He is,
yeah.
But Stanley Kubrick, our friend from the UK, he says, I think every young teenage boy has had issues with his father and had that I cast you from this house moment. So he's definitely co-signing what you were talking about.
And that's the thing, too. It's like, I'm a strong believer that there's, on a very human level, we all have more in common than we have, that we don't have, than the differences. And so, you know, you could sit down with, you know, especially in American culture, you could sit down with 150 different teenage boys from all sorts of different backgrounds, both socioeconomically, politically, whatever, and you're going to discover that they have a lot of the same similarities. The same issues with their father, the same issues with, you know, falling in love for the first time. These are all universal things that people have been going through forever, but we get so lost in the labels that we put upon ourselves that we think, you know, okay, this experience is either exclusive to me or exclusive to me and my people, whoever my people may be. We might call them, you know, other black folks, or maybe we'll call them other Christians, or maybe we call them, you know, everybody from Atlanta, you know, I mean, whatever it might be, so.
Mr. Walker, if you wouldn't mind, I want to put you on hold for just 1 second. We're going to go to a musical break.
Okay.
We still, so I want to get the show back on its footing. When we get back, I want to ask you a question, because I know your time is precious, but I want to ask you a question. We've been talking about the abstract with number 13, just for our audience after the break. If you could just get into a little bit about what it's about so they know what they're getting into for it. Because it's coming out next month, correct? Number zero?
Yes. Number zero comes out in November, and then issue one comes out in December. So, yeah.
Okay. Hold for 1 moment. We're going to be right back with Mr. Walker. This is something new, actually. We know that the RZA has a movie coming up soon. The Man with the Iron Fist, this is from the soundtrack. The Black Keys and RZA, the baddest man alive. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Take a gasoline bath and I walk through fire. bear hug a grizzly. Suck milk from a kitty. Take the Saunders hat from his head and use it for a frisbee. Spit in the crocodile face. Have a menage named Swabber, two female apes. They're sleeping the barrel of bush and eyes. I drink honey straight from the beehive. Fuzzy jumping off the Empire State. Butt naked, rolling pain across the Golden Gate. Butt naked with the fattest man alive, and I don't plan to die. When the grim reaper come, I look her right in his eye. I bust up in the face of the witch of the east. Tell a great white shark to go and brush his teeth. Other man who stole the golden fleece. And I date great beauty right in front of the beast. The baddest man alive, and I don't plan to die. Come on, tell about it.
I'm the baddest man alive. I don't take no measure, I take no try. Sometimes I feel like I can't fly.
Okay, we're back. You have the lines open, Captain?
Everyone's open.
Okay, terrific. Mr. Walker, again, welcome to the Comic Shop. That was, of course, RZA and his new soundtrack, which I'm very eager for. You know, something else, before we get into your story, on your website, you have quite a few homages to Blaxploitation.
Yep.
So I take it you're definitely a fan of the 70s and early 80s period of black cinema.
Oh, yeah, that would be putting it mildly. That would be putting it mildly. Yeah. That was, you know, I used to publish, I had a fanzine back in the 90s called Badass Mofo, which is now I maintain the website. And I actually produced a documentary in the late 90s about Blaxploitation, and it's now it's stuck in all kinds of legal issues, so I can't do a real distribution deal, but I interviewed, you know, you name it, I pretty much interviewed almost everybody who was important: Fred Williamson, Jim Kelly, Jim Brown, Ron O'Neill, Rudy Ray Moore, all those guys I've interviewed and gotten to know, in some cases, fairly well. Over the years, I've gotten to know Rudy Ray Moore really well before he passed away. Had actually seen him probably just a couple months before he passed back in 2008. And that's definitely one of my passions and actually what I'm known more for than anything else, more than even, you know, the comic stuff. So,
you know, it's funny that you tapped into that, because one can make the argument that might have been the first wave of black heroism as far as, you know, kind of a pop art, pulp art kind of thing. I mean, now we see that there's a Black Dynamite, which I definitely, you know, the movie, I think it's even going to be a Black Dynamite 2.
That's what I heard.
So you would think that, you know, you had all these films in the 70s that saved Hollywood, literally.
Yeah.
And now it seems to be difficult 30 years later to have an all-black sci-fi film or project green-lighted. Isn't that are you coming across that? You know, well, Dark Horse, even on the comic side of things, is it somewhat difficult to push these ideas?
Oh, it's always difficult. It's actually beyond difficult to be 100% honest. And it's that part of it is that pervasive belief that the fan structure is predominantly white, which is just not true. And the thing that amazes me is, you know, I mean, I haven't been to New York City Comic Con yet. When I was a kid growing up on the East Coast, I used to go to the Creation Cons all the time, and I've been to San Diego for years and years and years. And you see, you know, a lot of black and Latino and Asian kids and adults, for that matter, going to these shows and collecting and consuming this product, and yet it's not reflective, the product itself is not reflective of us. And that's straight across the board. It's you know, comics is probably a little bit worse than film. The film is pretty bad, too. I mean, when Tyler Perry is what is packaged and sold to us as a viable black action hero in the 21st century, we're doomed. You know, it's like that's worse than having, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's worse than having like someone like Stephen Fetchett or Mantan Moreland or some of those guys from the 30s and 40s. I mean, Tyler Perry is just a joke without a punchline. And so for us to go from Richard Roundtree in the Shaft movies or Robert Hooks in Trouble Man or Ron O'Neill in Superfly to Tyler Perry in Alex Cross is like, that's like 30 steps backwards. It's, you know, it's taking the emasculated man and putting him up as something that we should want to aspire to. And I think a lot of that is in response to guys like RZA who have, you know, you can't emasculate those guys, yet they exist in a different medium in terms of entertainment. You know, it'll be interesting to see what The Man with the Iron Fist does and where that takes his films, you know, because if we're not doing comedies, if it's not Will Smith or Denzel Washington, we're pretty much only supposed to be doing comedies. And even when we're not doing comedies, we're not action heroes on the same level. I mean, Will Smith very rarely has a love interest in his movies. Denzel very rarely has a love interest in his movies. So we exist as men of action, but not men of, you know, of hitting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, listen, we talk about this quite a bit on AfroNerd. I want to move back first and then move forward.
Okay.
Just for our listening audience, you know, give us a little bit of a quick synopsis of, without giving away too much, obviously, because I have to buy the books.
Yeah.
I actually went back and got the Dark Horse books, Dark Horse 2-6, Dark Horse Presents. And that's going to be collected in Zero, I believe, right?
Issue Zero, yes.
Right. But for those who have yet to purchase it, just walk us through a little bit about just the synopsis of number 13.
Okay, well, number 13 is the name of the character. He is a cyborg. He is he looks to be like he's probably like maybe 11 or 12 years old, and he's wandering this post-apocalyptic wasteland looking for his father, although really he doesn't understand what a father is or who his father is, and he is at the same time a weapon of mass destruction. We see that he can, you know, in an instant, his arms sort of convert into these high-powered, high-caliber machine guns, and he can kill pretty much anything. And so he's this seemingly innocent-looking child, but at the same time, he's an incredibly deadly weapon. And it's the issue zero, which is that initial story, is him wandering through this post-apocalyptic wasteland, trying to figure out who his father is. And that story is almost like the pilot or the proof of concept for the three-issue miniseries that would come along. When Dark Horse finally decided they wanted to do it, I was like, okay, well, you know, Robert, where do you want to take this story is what I kept asking him, you know. And then it was like a lot of artists, he has some really great ideas, but they needed to be shaped and molded into a story that could fit into three issues. And so I just sort of came along and was like, okay, well, we need to, you know, what was the apocalypse that destroyed this world? And, you know, and Robert and I talked about it, and we wanted to be sort of some sort of biological, viral apocalypse. And it was so, you know, there was this plague that basically turned most of the world into these mutated-looking monsters, but they're still people deep down inside. And that's part of the theme of what's going on in this story, is that there's this you know, it's been nearly 100 years since the world has ended. It's been like 60 years or something like that. And we're still fighting the same petty fights. It's the humans versus the monsters, but everybody's deep down inside, they're all still the same. So it becomes sort of this metaphor for race and the need for us to really see past, you know, what's on the outside to what's on the inside. That's what I really ultimately wanted it to be about.
Daryl, I'm sure you have some questions as well for Mr. Walker.
No, not any questions. Going back to one thing, I'm glad RZA gets the project made, but I kind of wanted to see the original where it would be all the members of the Wu-Tang Clan as the warring families, sort of like Black Dynamite meets Iron Fist. That's what I was hoping for, but, you know, I, that aside, this sounds like, you know, Cyborg meets The Walking Dead meets Crossed. And you know what? But, again, the best thing about it is that the protagonist, for me, the best thing is that the protagonist is a young black male, which appears to be a young black male. Of course, he's mostly cybernetic parts. But my thing is, you know, and this goes back, and, sir, this sparked controversy last week when we were talking about it, that, oh, will comic fans like us accept this? And I'm hoping they do, because we need more of this. We need more thinking outside the box, you know? DC tries, but they pull back. Marvel tries, but they pull back. That's why I love places like Image and Dark Horse. They give you guys with vision a chance to just go out and do these things. And for that, I'm appreciative. And I can't wait to get the limited series.
I appreciate you saying that. You know what? The interesting thing when you're a creator, and I've had this conversation with Robert and his brother Jeremy and Keith Knight and Jamar Nicholas and all these other comics creators over the years, You go to a show and you set up and you sit there and you see black folks walking by and you try to make eye contact with them, you try to call them over, and, like, they will go out of your way to avoid you. You know what I mean? And I think that there's this, like, fear of I don't quite understand it, but I think there's this fear of, like, oh, man, if I go over there and talk to that creator, I'm going to get found out. Like I think I'm fooling all these people into thinking, because I'm reading Spider-Man and Batman and everything else, that I'm okay. And it's like, yeah, you are an okay person. You can read whatever you want. And there's almost like this fear of association with other black folks. I see it at conventions all the time. And with it, and it's part of that, you know, you guys call yourselves the Afro nerd culture. I have a group of friends, we just call ourselves the Black Geek Collective, you know. And we talk about this all the time. It's like we can't be afraid to make our voices heard and to be seen in groups, you know, at conventions and going to movies and really speaking with our dollars, you know. If you take the amount of money it's going to cost to buy the entire number 13 miniseries in Dark Horse or eventually the trade paperback, if you take that money for the 3-4 months that these come out, and just don't buy one Marvel title or one DC title, it's not going to change the world for Marvel or DC. One less unit of Spider-Man sold, one less unit of Superman sold will not make a difference. But the more units of an independent book, especially if it's an independent book that promotes diversity within its characters, that can make a difference. And that's what I'm trying to tell people all the time. It's like, you know, especially – it's like the fact that I'm a grown man and I'm still having the same problems with the comic industry that I had when I was a kid. You know what I'm saying? It's like nothing's changed in 20, 30 years. And that's a sad statement to me.
Well, actually, you know, I think that I want to make a comment, but the captain has a question as well. Captain?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, I'm just going to play devil's advocate real quick. Nothing more, just devil's advocate. How do you respond to those individuals that say, you have this black android looking for, let's say, his father? Why does he have to be black, and why does he have to be looking for his father? How do you respond?
Oh, this is going to be a simple question. Oh, God.
You know, it is. It's a great question. In the second issue, issue number two, which is technically the third issue because we have issue zero, we get into how he becomes an android and what happens. And so I don't want to reveal anything.
Please.
Let's just say that. But it really is, you know, the interesting thing was when Robert and I were, you know, when Robert was coming up with the character designs and then when we were talking about how we should color them, and it was like, well, you know, at the end of the day, everybody else is all these weird different colors. There's no, you know, there's some purple people and weird shades of pink and orange. And I was like, at the end of the day, it's difficult to talk about this in terms of race because the vast majority of the characters, you wouldn't know what race they are. And the one thing I wasn't going to do was write them in such a way, like remember in the Transformers, the first Transformers movie, where you knew that the one car was like the black guy, and then they killed him off, so you knew for sure he was a black guy. But he spoke a little bit more jive than all the others. And
you have a book on that too, don't you?
Yes, I do. I do. It's called "Why Does the Brother Gotta Die," which is just a long-form essay on examining why black characters so often were killed in, like, science fiction and horror movies. It doesn't happen as much as it used to, but it still happens. They still kill us off.
Because we never learned to say no. When the white dude making out with the hot white chick goes, "Hey, dude, can you go back out to the car in the pitch black without a flashlight because I forgot the beers in there," that's where a brother's supposed to step up. Like, really? You're going to send me out without a flashlight? Who knows what's out there? I better have some backup with me. You know, like that.
Yeah.
Everyone in the black audience, every Asian in the audience, every Latino in the audience knows once the black dude steps outside the cabin, he's dead. So we all knew that. It's perfect. Like I said, this dude is Huey Freeman grown up. That's what this dude is.
Well, you know something I want to bring up to Mr. Walker's attention, and this is part of the reason why we developed Afro Nerd, because we noticed the same thing at these conventions. We did attend the convention a few weeks ago, and I enjoy myself with these conventions. And you know, this is the sixth year that New York has had this big one. We've had small ones for over 30, 40 years, but
yeah,
this big one that's almost rivaling the San Diego convention. But when I first attended the one in 2006, the first thing that I noticed, like, wow, there's a lot of black people, brown folks, folks of all hues here, that when I was a kid, I would want maybe a friend of mine, we would just be flies in milk. We still enjoyed ourselves, but it's a totally different scene now. And I'm wondering, you know, one of the reasons why we developed Afro Nerd is because I think we must develop some kind of cohesive presence at these places, because we do have a significant, black pop or pulp imprint. When he just mentioned Huey Freeman, if you factored in the Black Dynamites, the Boondocks, Will Smith and his properties, the various comic book properties. I mean, I can go on and on. You know, we should have literally our own Newsarama.
Yes,
and
which is
what I'm working on. We need to have that there.
And you know, the interesting thing is that because you're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, I don't know how old you guys are, but I went to my first comic convention in 1978 in Manhattan. It was one of the old Creation Cons, and it was my mom brought me and my cousin, and it was like you said, it was like feeling like the sort of the flies in the buttermilk, you know. And but over the years, I've watched it grow. I think what happened is that there's a generation, maybe even two generations of people of color who grew up, you know, consuming this fandom, but they were all separated for one reason or another. They weren't going to the conventions. They weren't aware of each other. And so you see it still. Again, that's why you go to a show and nobody wants to talk to anybody else.
Well, you know something else, too. You know, and I thought about this. Look at the reaction that the Hunger Games received with characters that were implicit. Well, you know, I had to bring it up. This is what makes me. I have to think about it because when we spoke about this last week, as Daryl talked about, we were so excited about the story, and there is definitely a buzz about your book on the internet, definitely. And so, I mean, there's people of all hues that are just into this because it appears to be a fascinating story. But then you come. But then when I said quickly, okay, how quickly will this thing? If this thing gets optioned for some kind of movie, how quickly will it not be a black kid anymore? look how Akira has been changed now. Tom Cruise is an Akira. So you see how this works. And then when the stories are implicitly written with race in mind, in a way. They didn't say black in Hunger Games, but they were described as having brown skin. I mean, they were being rather futuristic about the description of the characters. The fan base were upset about the girl and all these different black, you know, Lenny Kravitz. I mean, I don't get it. So even if we try to go there, we might get the backlash. We might get the backlash or blacklash, as it were.
Yeah, I wrote a novel that came out last year. It's a young adult action adventure novel. It takes place in a world of superheroes. The lead character is a black kid. He's 17 years old. And we had, you know, I had signed a management deal, and I actually managed to get a really good agent, which was amazing because they're hard to come by. And we could not sell the book to save our lives. And there was two things that they kept saying. They kept saying, well, this is written for older boys, and older boys don't read. That was the first thing they kept saying. But then all the editors we talked to kept saying, I really had difficulty relating to the character. Which is code, right? You know, it's like what they call Obama Muslim. We know what that's code for. And like none of us are that stupid to not decipher these codes that they use. And so I was like, you know, okay, so you couldn't relate to the character. What about the character could you not relate to? You can relate to Harry Potter, correct? And he's a preteen boy who goes to a school for, you know, wizards and witches, which I'm sure you've never done. So how can you relate to that? You know what I'm saying? The key is you're just lazy and you're subscribing to, I'm not going to call you a racist, but you're subscribing to racist attitude by not even trying to think outside the box. You know what I'm saying? It's like when Will Smith made I Am Legend, it's like, okay, Will Smith played a character that, if you read the books, is a white dude in his late 40s. He doesn't look anything like that dude, but it's like he just brought it. You know, and but it has to be Will Smith or it has to be Denzel for people to accept it. And I get really frustrated with that, you know, and I don't know how to get in a lot of ways. And this is where I get into a lot of trouble, but I'm going to say it on the record. I'm on AfroNet Radio right now. Right. It's not my job to fix you. OK, you have the disease. If you think this way, if you read the Hunger Games and love the books and then see the movie and then get all upset because Rue was played by a black actress who clearly is looking like how Suzanne Collins described the character. And you're getting all bent out of shape and, you know, throwing out a lot of racist BS. That's your disease, okay? I can tell you, hey, here are three or four things you might take that might help you with this illness that you have, but it's not my job to force it down your throat, all right? Just like I don't have to take your racist crap, you know? And so that I sort of go through life as a creator, which is like, look, I'm not trying to cure anybody of their racism. I'm trying to entertain people. And if in the process some racist idiots abandon some of their notions, either through what I've created or maybe because they've met me and went, oh, he's one of the cool black people, so be it. But like, as black folks, we'll go crazy. We have enough problems just trying to survive in America, you know, let alone trying to find that magic cure-all. And all I can do is just tell people, no, the disease is still here. You know, you think we live in a post-racial America, and you're wrong. And I can give you some facts and figures and show you why you're wrong. And if you want to accept it, that's fine. And as long as you don't come over into my yard you know, because then I'll, you know, break out my gun and fire back at you, you know.
Well, Mr. Walker, unfortunately, we have another segment to go to, and we appreciate you coming through. We're going to have to definitely have you back, even if Mr. Love can get back with us as well. We'd appreciate it. Hopefully our boards will be working in a pristine fashion. So, but you were an excellent guest, and I tell you something. Trust me, the reason why we developed this program is because we hear your pain, we're suffering with you. And we believe, and I'm pretty sure that the captain and Daryl will agree with me, we honestly believe that part of our problem, too, you're talking about fighting white folks and kind of a Euro perception of blackness, you're also going to be fighting black people, too. Because there's a fair share of folks on both sides of the spectrum that are comfortable in a monolith. And we need to see, I mean, half the minstrelsy, to me, we talk about neo-minstrelsy incessantly on AfroNerd.
Yeah.
You know, one of the ways to combat it is to have Idris Elba and Prometheus, to have folks like Will Smith do what he's doing. I love Will Smith's stuff, but he should not be the only one. We have to have a lot more imagery.
Yeah. No, you guys are just going to have me back on because this is all, you know, anytime you need me on, just let me know because I could talk about this at length, and I do. I talk about it at length all the time, and I do believe it's really important, and a lot of times you do bits and pieces at a time, you know, and it's like I'm doing the best I can, and you guys are doing the best you can, and at some point you hope that there's more connectivity within different social circles, different cities, and that can spread out, you know what I'm saying? It's like now all the people that are listening to your show are hearing me talk about my thing, maybe they'll check out what I'm doing, and then one of them gets in touch with me, and then I can, you know, connect with their circles. And that's what it's all about. It's really grassroots. That's what we just have to do is maintain sort of a grassroots connection.
Well, definitely. I'll get back to you behind the scenes because we would like to have you back. Incidentally, in the next segment, because this is the first part is Comic Shop. The second part is called AfroNerd Radio. It's all AfroNerd Radio. But the second part, we're going to talk about this whole yellow face controversy dealing with Cloud Atlas. So we're still going to be talking about some of this stuff. And that's a problematic within itself. So, again, Mr. Walker, we appreciate you coming through. I'll contact you behind the scenes. And, folks, pick up number 13. I implore you, as the Thor would say, I command it. So I command you to do it. So we'll definitely have you back. We appreciate you coming through.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, folks, that again was Mr. David Walker. Pick up number 13 by Dark Horse Comics for next month, starting out with number 0. And I think a three-part series, miniseries is coming thereafter. Captain, time is kind of moving along with us. Darren, do you still want to stick around? Because we're going to talk about Cloud Atlas.
I got 20 more minutes, so I'm down for this.
Okay.
But, boy, the topics are just getting easier now.
Exactly. It's just that we're a little bit off tilt because of our problems at the beginning. So, Captain, you know, we're going to go next door.
Yes, sir.
Are we going to do AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk or AfroNerd Radio? So, folks, stick around. There's more pulp, pop, politics. It's going to get a little deeper. So, I can find the clip. All right, folks. Hold on, we're gonna go next door. Bit of real.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously, you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lot of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Because obviously, you have lost it. The great Denzel Washington from The Great Debaters, folks. Welcome to the second half. This is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, we have a lot to get into. And trust me, it's going to be a real deep one. Let's get into a groove first. This is DJ Jazzy Jeff and CL Smooth, All I Know. Let's groove.
I make it move like I wanna move with them horns. Let them play with them strings while I spit the life for kings. Put a cud in it, stud with it, we got it. Dudes that was meant to have it. Fans wanna reach out and grab it. I'm just an ordinary man with an unordinary lifestyle. Seems early I would live as a child. I was conceived a mistake, but through God it's really all it takes for me to be born and make the earth shake. This was raised from the bottom. So before them plain clothes got them, soak up the four square mouths to pop them. It's me in the flesh, here to put them rumors to rest and let you celebrate hip-hop's best. From the womb to the tomb, hit the game real soon with a tune that's gonna take sun straight to the moon. Ted Al, see it's my turn now. All competitors bow, all you're saying is wow.
All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything it takes to hold me down. All I see.
The pedigree to own a whole catalog. All I'm singing is, don't sleep on me, dog. I really walk them streets there. School them young wolves. CL is slay anything in his way. Okay, it's all about the aura I project. That ultimate connect and how you see me as a man of respect, right? So it's like a mutual agreement. All your feet is in the cement. Learn the rules, let you earn your pay. Sure, nosy than you think of what it cost me. To how the world forced me to kill them softly, baby. How the music sound from the basement and how the word bless me. Who let you see the fame don't impress me, dig it? Why it's cut from a different cloth, blood to set it off. Keep a real nice piece in the loft, easy. Anytime you can hold your head, then you can hold some bread and relate to what CL said. Yes.
All I know is the way it gotta go. Everything
Okay, enough of that. Again, folks, that was real hip-hop. It still exists. You know, I will play it for you. Urban Alternative Music here at Afternoon featuring Captain Kerr. That was DJ Jazzy Jeff, legendary DJ Jazzy Jeff, and also equally legendary CL Smooth, All I Know, All I Know. All right, folks, I could not do it without my partner, or I should say partners, actually, partners in White Collar Crime. First up, Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Cloud, we're going to begin to dig into the Atlas. So let's go.
Yes, and, you know, also from the comic shop, he figured we have him stick around as well. We could use his advice. Beaming in, Daryl B.
Breaking news, bag flies around in circle in Midtown. Be there.
Listen, folks, we have a lot to get into, but obviously listen to the rebroadcast of the comic shop, which we just finished up with. But we're having Daryl in on this one because we're still going to talk about sci-fi at Afternoon Radio, which makes sense. But there's a new movie that came out this Friday featuring Tom Hanks and the beauteous Halle Berry. By the Wachowskis. I can't say Wachowski brothers anymore, can I? Wachowskis.
Siblings.
Wachowski,
yeah,
siblings.
The siblings, yeah.
Called Cloud Atlas. And already there's some controversy with this thing, and I'm not sure how to weigh in on this. I understand it, but I think there's a little bit more going on. Cloud Atlas, definitely a, I guess, deals with rebirth, deals with notions of time travel, and reincarnation, definitely something from Nietzsche. Nietzsche is definitely a sci-fi trope. Gal, did you see Cloud Atlas yet?
Yes, and I thought it was okay, but it's obvious, and I'll make a reference, and you'll see where I'm coming from. The Wachowski siblings never saw an episode of Quantum Leap in their life.
That's a major diss, damn boy.
honestly, all right? And folks, Afternoon is about to tell you the controversy, but you'll get why I say Quantum Leap in a second. Go ahead, Afternoon.
Well, you know what? That's your genius, because you just explained it, because I'm figuring – Let's go to the controversy now instead of me just mumbling. The controversy deals with yellow face. Just as there's such a thing, and we talk about it incessantly, historically, blackface minstrelsy, where you had non-blacks portraying black roles, most of the time done for comedic vehicle. Definitely not something that was done respectfully. In this case, you have many in the Asian community that are coming forward saying, hey, wait a minute. You have the black actors and the white actors, the non-Asian actors, who are portraying Asians in makeup. And two core arguments would be, A, the makeup is bad. They even reference Balkans. So the makeup makes Asian folk look like Balkans. I actually saw that in print from one of the critics. And also they're saying, you know, we do have a great deal of fantastic Asian actors that you could have just hired for this thing. Now, Daryl already brought up Quantum Leap. That could have been employed to make this more interesting. But they decided to go the makeup route. So I guess you know the actor is still – because the whole thing is – these characters are supposed to live on or reincarnate. So you're supposed to still see a little bit of Halle Berry in the Asian character, in the white character, and so forth. So I was wondering, well, maybe they have to have the makeup, but you just kind of rectified how they could have played that. So go into it a little bit deeper for us, Carol.
All right. Let me just hop in on this real quick. For all those people who don't know, and it's for the you young bucks out there, Quantum Leap was this series in the 90s, relatively the 90s, where you had a character, Sam Beckett, who is constantly leaping through time, becoming different characters, right? But to the audience, you would see him as Sam Beckett. To everyone else around them, they would see the person that he leapt into. So essentially, he would be living these persons' lives and correcting the mistake. The problem with the Wachowski siblings is when you start putting actors in different makeups of different races, you are going to offend people. Your tone here was great, all right? I get the message. The movie is well written. It's well done. But the problem is, after the whole Last Airbender mess, after the Akira mess, after, let's just say, Asians in Hollywood, Asian audiences who love movies and stuff, their feelings are just a little bit hurt. So you go ahead and you run this. Yo, when Afro Nerd sent me this story, I just, when I looked at my Hotmail after he emailed it to me, I knew it as soon as I got out the theater, because I went to watch it at Bay Terrace Theaters, okay? And that's a Bay Terrace in New York, Queens. It's a highly Asian populated suburb. So there was a lot of Asian people that were in this theater watching this movie. And let me tell you, by the time it ended, a lot of them left. I'm not joshing you. They got up. They felt like, I asked somebody there, it felt like they spat on us again. And someone there told me, hey, they couldn't just do Quantum Leap. And I went, you know what, Beth, I can't even take credit for it. One of the Asian, an Asian girl around like 16, 17, as I'm interviewing people after the movie, asking them what they thought, they couldn't Quantum Leap this? I was like, hon, you need to speak to more of your teenagers to go back into that sci-fi, because that's good sci-fi there. Like Quantum Leap. After Nerd, back to you.
Yeah, actually, you know, Quantum Leap was ahead of its time because, as you said, you would figure they would have been more politically incorrect in the early 90s. Again, folks, Quantum Leap was a fairly popular sci-fi TV series starring Scott Bakula. Bakula also ends up being a Starship captain later on in the early 2000s with Star Trek Enterprise, which only lasted about 4 seasons. Anyway. I forgot about that. That would have been more interesting, and it's more of a head game with the audience. It brings the audience inside. It's more work for the audience. And actually, one of the complaints about Cloud Atlas, aside from the yellow face controversy, deals with that some of it may be a little bit too highbrow for the audience, that it's a lot of themes that are working, somewhat confusing to some people. Some folk, that's what I'm hearing. Is that another thing going on too, that it might be a bit confusing to some of the moviegoers?
But that's just it. It's supposed to make you think. You are supposed to think. You're not supposed to have a set pat ending here. It's a very sci-fi movie. Sci-fi fans will get this movie right away because we are trained to think about a lot of things. And about this method too, I forget what year. I think it was 2009, but 2009, they did a black and white picture about Bob Dylan's life, and they had various actors and actresses portray Bob Dylan at parts of his life, okay? In other words, everybody outside is seeing Bob Dylan in terms of the movie, but we're seeing the specific actor and actresses portraying the role, all right? They could have done that here. You did. Once you step to make the prosthetics, once you step to make the coloring, once you step in, once you go over that line, boy, you better make sure you got it correct, because people will come down on you, and sure enough, it happened here.
Well, actually, we have a call. Let's open up the lines. I'm sure this is this is a touchy subject, and I will say, we said this before, that, hey, listen, they've done this with the black community forever. They still do this. They still sneak in this whole costuming of blackness. So I feel for the Asian community because, you know, hey, this has been done. This has been done. When they had Angelina Jolie play a woman of color, I forgot, it was based on a real-life story. Daniel Pearl was a journalist that was beheaded, you know, at the height of the Iraqi crisis. And his wife, who is, I believe, French and of African extraction, Marianne Pearl, she was played by Angelina Jolie. Angelina Jolie played in had a curly wig and tanned her skin a little bit. I mean, she has fuller features, so, I mean, you know. But still, you know, why are we still costuming people? Anyway, let's open up the lines. Caller, welcome to Africa featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from, 206.
Hey, what's up, fellas? This is Michael Dean. How you doing?
Okay, I should recognize your number by now. Mike Dean, what's up, man?
Not much. I just wanted to touch on the Cloud Atlas. I saw the movie last night. I actually thought the movie itself was excellent. Shockingly surprised. I didn't know what to expect when I walked into it. And I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was very ambitious for them to do what they did. You know, in terms of the whole yellow face and all that, I can understand the argument, but I think in the context of the movie, it works and makes sense because, again, I think the whole thing of using the same actors to play various roles, yes, they're going to play different races. Some of them play different sexes. I mean, one of the lead actors in the movie, I don't know her name, is an Asian woman. Featured predominantly through the thing. And her character, even if I'm not the spoiler, it seemed like some sort of, you know, guy or whatever. So I don't think it's a necessary argument. I don't like the fact that an artist would be dissuaded from doing what they want to do because of retaliation or they think that they're going to offend people. I say good art should offend some people, or at least ask the question or start a dialogue, which I think this movie may do for some. You know, again, there's black characters playing sort of Asian features. You know, the one thing they didn't do on this I didn't notice was have a white person play a black person, which may have started off some sort of controversy. But at the end of the day, I think everything was done with respect. I don't think they did because they didn't want to cast Asian people in roles. I don't think that is – I didn't see that at all. Again, I think it was two prominent Asian actors in this movie. And I think the male played male and female parts. So
that was
amazing.
Captain, you have something to say as well. Captain.
Well, first and foremost, all right, I did not see the movie. But before we get down to the nitty-gritty, what we must all realize, of course we all realize here, because we're very intelligent people, the gatekeepers at times have a tendency to feel that, let's do this and we make money. Race is always a factor. Let me repeat that. Race is always a factor. And it's just not as simple as being artistic and putting something out there, because we do realize that when you're dealing with these big budgets, money dictates the art instead of the art dictating the money. And in a utopian world, it wouldn't matter. It definitely would not matter. Now, if I was an Asian person, I would be offended. As a black man, I'm somewhat offended. Not as offended, you know, obviously as if I was Asian, but I am somewhat offended because I do get the concept of the movie, you understand, with everything essentially what they were trying to do. But you always have to remember race is a factor, and there's people that are going to sit down and do exactly what essentially just happened. So look, why don't you just do this, quantum leap it, in these certain aspects of the movie, and then there you go. You know, it gives a good pass. a lot of times, let's look at it from the other side also. When these decisions are made by the powers that be that are normally all white, and not like they're going out definitely to say, let's screw over Asian people, let's screw over black people. They do what is comfortable. You understand? So there's also a learning curve that needs to happen on their end. You can't do what is comfortable or what necessary is the norm. You have to just realize race is a factor, and let's get it right from that perspective, and then we can move forward without compromising the art. That's all I wanted to say. Back over to you, sir, after learning.
Can I add something to that real quick, just what he said? And I agree. I think race is a factor, but I will say this. I mean, you know, we're a people, right? But I think race is a factor, but I don't think they care. I don't think the Rakowski brothers care as much to let them not do what they do. And I'm going to say that because to me, this movie, I can't imagine this movie making any money. I don't even imagine this movie being successful. I would imagine some people think this movie is ridiculous. To me, this is like the total opposite of the movies that they're going to... I'm shocked that they made this movie operate that way, because to me, it's awesome. Because some people could just seem incoherent. And it's such a lot of stuff going on, maybe not making a lot of sense. But to me, I feel like they did this movie as like the odd man out of how they normally would have said, you know what, if there was anybody else attracted to this movie, no, you're not going to do it. We can't make any money with this. How do we market this movie? I mean, it's too much. It's not an easy sale. So sometimes I think there are certain movies where, yeah, race is a factor. And of course, the movies commonly got white characters, as most Western movies do. To expect them to do anything other would be out of the norm, in my opinion. But I don't think that they're doing this to be disrespectful. I think it's an ensemble piece movie where, again, the whole point of the movie, when the credits come on, the first thing they do is they show Tom Hanks and they show every single character he played. And I think the makeup, just to touch on the makeup, I think the makeup, I wouldn't say bad, but I think they do it on purpose because they want you to try to recognize, oh, that's him. Oh, that's her. Oh, is that him? I think that's a part of the movie, like one of the points of the movie. Is that they want you to sort of recognize those people, which is why I think they may have used such a recognizable person like a Tom Hanks or a Halle Berry.
Well, I think that's what in all fairness to the to many of the Asian community, from especially this specific organization, they were more upset about the quality of the makeup, which made it seem a little bit more laughable. I think, and obviously they understood, that's the balancing act. Is that you do want to still see the actor. It's supposed to be Halle Berry in a different light. So in essence, it's supposed to be Halle Berry. It's supposed to be Tom Hanks in another life, reincarnated. So I understand, but I think they thought that, and I can understand that you can't have some really below standard makeup, and then it doesn't really look believable. They thought that they looked like Balkans.
I can see that again. Because, you know, the same point. Eddie Murphy playing
that might
Jewish
come across
as coming in America. I mean, it could go either way, right?
All right, let's do a quick transition. Daryl, I don't know if you want to stick around for this. We're going to talk about, it's going to be more race, Obama and race. So there's a lot more. You're welcome to stick around, or, you know.
Now, I'll step out because I got the end of the giant game to catch. You guys, good luck with the rest of the show.
Okay. Sounds good. As always, man, we appreciate your support.
All right.
Good looking out for that. All right, folks, let's do a quick turnaround. Let's play some funk to ease our nerves. I'm sure that Mike Dean appreciates this. This is Irresistible Bitch, the original demo version. I don't know if our audience has heard this. Yes, it's pretty interesting. Sounds like bacon grease. So let's get into it. This is Irresistible Bitch by His Royal Badness, the original demo. Let's get into it. Let's groove.
Why am I the one who left? I guess you think you home. Hell no, that ain't you.
Okay, folks, we're back. Again, that was His Royal Badness Prince performing a demo version of Irresistible Bitch. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We had a rough start from the first show. Of course, check out the comic shop. Unfortunately, our systems went down. So, these things happen. We had the great Mr. David Walker. He came by to talk about his latest comic book. Definitely check it out for next month. Called Number 13, great sci-fi miniseries coming up. Going forward, however, we have to talk about President Obama and how race is, I would normally say slowly, it's not even really coming up slowly, it's coming up as quickly as this Frankenstein that they're talking about. That, you know, we dealt with this in 2008. Now it appears to be even more pronounced than in 2008. With polling suggesting that there's definitely more animus on the part of whites toward black and Latin folk, or minorities in general, black specifically, minorities in general, that this election is boiling down to race, that since 2008, President Obama has lost approximately 20% of his white male base. And it's coming up about race, you know. And any thoughts on that, Captain? We're going to go. I have a clip to play as well. But any thoughts about what we're seeing here? Or I guess you're not surprised.
I'm not surprised. At first, you know, in 2008, a lot of people, even though they voted him in, didn't necessarily take the black man really that seriously, even though they voted him in. Now, once you're in and they hand you the keys as a black male, you have to walk on water. If you give the white male the position, the CEO, the chief executive officer, and he messes up, you're used to that. Now you're going to switch gears and you make the black male the chief executive officer, in this case, commander-in-chief, okay? walk on water for the obvious reasons. Rebellion. They turn around. And that's all what this is right now. Now let's get to the clips. So great, Afro Nerd.
All right. And again, folks, there's a lot of tentacles, a lot of tangents with this racial dynamic. We learned that former Secretary of State Colin Powell, just as he did the first time around in 2008, this time he has endorsed President Obama. And another politician, Mr. Sununu, rather coyly says that, well, they belong to the same tribe, don't they? I'm paraphrasing. That's essentially what he's saying. You know, why wouldn't he support another black person? So there's some flack that he's receiving, but not nearly enough flack that I think that he should be. I mean, that's a lot of it I hear all the time, casually by many who think that it's okay, well, you know what? Let's play the clip and then we will unpack. This is the Young Turks first. The Young Turks talking about this Sununu critique of Colin Powell supporting President Barack Obama. We have some calls too. Caller, hold on. Let's go to the clip first and then we'll answer the phone. Hold on.
Now, Janice Sununu is one of the top advisors for Mitt Romney, and he's been the most aggressive on television attacking the president. Well, recently, Colin Powell came out and endorsed Barack Obama again. Now, he had done it in 2008, and Powell said that he was worried about Mitt Romney's tax plan and his foreign policy, and that President Obama had exhibited strong leadership, especially in foreign policy, over the last 4 years, with Bin Laden dead and some responsible foreign policy and some irresponsibly conservative foreign policy when it comes to out-of-control drone strikes, et cetera. It's hard to argue with Colin
Powell. Consider a mature drawdown in Iraq and the plans for the withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Right. Now, so those are the legitimate reasons that Colin Powell has for voting. And by the way, the most important probably in his consideration is that Colin Powell is very much against the neoconservative branch of the Republican Party. He is the old-school branch, the realpolitik branch of the Republican Party. Brent Scowcroft agrees with him. All of George H.W. Bush's advisors are on Colin Powell's side. That's a real branch within the Republican Party. Now, of course, when John Sununu comes on to talk about this, he's not going to concentrate on that policy difference. He's got a different idea on why Colin Powell might have gone with Barack Obama in this election.
When you take a look at Colin Powell, you have to wonder whether that's an endorsement based on issues or whether he's got a slightly different reason for preferring President Obama.
What reason would that be?
Well, I think when you have somebody of your own race that you're proud of being president of the United States, I applaud Colin for standing with him.
Johnson, nice to talk to you.
I like the beginning of that. When you take a look at Colin Powell.
Yeah. He's like, wait, that wasn't subtle enough? Okay, all right, I'll just say it. They're the same race.
Yeah.
But I applaud him for that.
Yeah,
I'm sure you do. John. I'm sure you do. But again, it might be just simply a case of projection. They think, I vote for Mitt Romney because I'm white and he's white. Yeah. So isn't that how everybody bases their vote? So
I assume Colin Powell doesn't say.
What's that?
Why wasn't that the follow-up question? So are you supporting Mitt Romney only because you're both white?
Right. And by the way, weird that Colin Powell did not support Jesse Jackson for president all those years, even though they both happen to be black. Huh.
Herman Cain ran for president this year.
Yeah. Now, weird that Colin Powell didn't support him either. Huh. Interesting. And then these guys then turn around, Sununu in a different appearance, when talking about President Obama using a curse word in the Rolling Stone interview when he said Mitt Romney was a bullshitter, said, can you believe this? This guy has, quote, no class. I know you, Mr. Racist John Sununu, and I don't say that lightly, and I don't say it just based on this. He's done it over again in this campaign.
There's a history of it.
Yeah, he said President Obama doesn't know how to be a real American, okay? Mm-hmm. And he has, you know, the same kind of Gingrich lines about the foreign mindset, et cetera. So Sununu has been by far the most racist of all of the Republican surrogates, almost brazenly so, and then says, but the president has no class. Oh, okay. Well, you're a very credible source on that, John, so I hear you.
All right, Captain, let's open up the lines, and then I will give you my opinion on this. It's a crazy world we're living in. Okay, caller, welcome to AFNR Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 904.
Hi, I'm Mr. George calling from Florida.
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine.
What are your thoughts on this controversy now? We're talking about Barack Obama. It seems to be a struggle. And a lot of it they're saying, based on polling, that a lot of people are, I don't want to say a lot of people, it seems like a lot of whites are weary or leery of blacks, browns, and everyone else. Minorities versus the in respect to how Obama is doing.
Oh, I had seen it. Yes, I read that poll on Yahoo.com. I think it's crazy. I think that when you go through the processes of change, you always go through, you know, fear and confrontational feelings. But I think ultimately, you know, as a society evolves, as you know, a newer generation basically occupies this country, those old ideas about race and gender issues, I mean, I think it soon depletes. That's what I think.
You know what? I'm not so sure about that. And I'll tell you why. Listen, this is called the AfroNerd Show. And the last program we spoke about in pop culture, we just spoke about the Hunger Games, where this was a young crowd now. And because a few of the characters were portrayed as black and were described as black in the original book, a lot of tweets went out. They're very negative. You would figure that this is a young person's world or a young person's pop culture representation. It's a young culture's work, and they didn't like the fact that Lenny Kravitz was in there, that one of the characters named Rue was portrayed by a black young girl. I mean, that's the crowd you would figure that would be the most open-minded, and they were saying, oh, this is too, you know, I didn't like it. This movie sucked because there were black people in it.
That's what they were saying?
Oh, yes. You can Google this. Google racism and Hunger Games. You will be shocked. And even with Hunger Games,
I'll look for that.
It was a big story that many of these young tweeters, they came out and were highly vitriolic toward the black characters. They thought that, well, why were these characters in there? Not knowing that the book described the characters as being black. It was simply falling in line with what was originally written. Young folks now. So this is a little bit harrowing. I tell you what, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know there was a huge issue with the Avatar movie. When they made the characters white and not Asian, I know there was an issue with that one, but I didn't know about Hunger Games.
Oh, Hunger Games was a big thing. It was a Twitter storm. They were being harassed. They were very nonchalant about the racism. They would say, I thought the movie was, matter of fact, they said one of the main components of that film was, why did they have to make all the black characters good? And some even said when the that's what they said. The cute girl that was ended up dying in the movie. For those who are into spoiler alerts, the movie's been out for half a year. some people tweeted, "I didn't feel anything when she died. I didn't feel anything when she died." Very nasty, very nasty, very nonchalant about the black people in the film. Even toward Lenny Kravitz,
I think it goes to display that white supremacy. Whether a lot of these Caucasian young males and young females want to acknowledge it or not, that they are inherently, I would say to a certain extent, inherently racist due to the society. Doesn't this go to show that white supremacy is not also a conscious mindset, but it could be subconscious as well? Because at the end of the day, if these people were intelligent, they would look at other movies and it would show that it's always portraying a Caucasian as a superhero and saving the planet.
Well, let's be fair. What you're saying is correct. As a matter of fact, the polling that I referenced, the polling talks about this. The polling talks about that there's indirect racism and there's direct racism. That some of what's going on is kind of an indirect imagery kind of thing. The fact that you had Romney supporters, some, at least one that they had a photograph of, wearing a T-shirt that said, let's bring the white back into the White House. You really lose the argument. I can't argue with someone who has that kind of mindset. We can talk about President Barack Obama's policies, but you can't honestly talk about his policies if you're hindered on the white in the White House nonsense.
But can you not say that that could be a Democratic provocateur?
I don't think so. There's too many. Listen,
I think it's possible.
There's too many. As I am a conservative, but I'm the conservative of the same cloth as Colin Powell. And Colin Powell, matter of fact, to be fair, there is a Colonel Wilkerson, which I'll play in a moment. Colonel Wilkerson, who was part of Powell's team and who was white, he is calling out on the racism. So we can't always say it. I mean, to be fair, Barack Obama was still put into office by a lot of white folks.
Yeah, but there's no question about it. Here's what I don't
there's still a considerable element. There's still an element that exists that we're having a tough time stamping out. Now, you know what? I want you to hold on for a moment because I referenced Colonel Wilkerson. He was on the Ed Schultz show. I have the clip. He says this. He says specifically, we're going to go into the Obama Powell thing because Powell can't even support Obama because of the racial thing. So let's go into what his friend and former colleague, who was hired by Powell and who is white, this is what he has to say about this controversy. Hold on.
General Powell doesn't think Romney is ready for the job. As for Sununu, he's just coming off as an angry old white guy who just doesn't like diversity. Let's turn to Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff at the State Department during General Colin Powell's term, and is currently the Pamela Harriman visiting professor at the College of William and Mary. Colonel, great to have you with us tonight. Right to the point, what do you think of John Sununu's assessment of General Powell?
Ed, I have respect for John Sununu as a Republican, as a member of my party, but I don't have any respect for the integrity of the position that he seemed to codify. Look at me, Ed. I'm white. I'm not black. Colin Powell picked me because of the content of my character and my competence, as he did every Asian, Hispanic, white person, black person who worked for him when he was chairman and when he was Secretary of State. To say that Colin Powell would endorse President Obama because of his skin color is like saying Mother Teresa worked for profit.
Now, do you agree with General Powell's endorsement? He is endorsing the President of the United States, and he very clearly stated why. Would you go along with that? Do you agree with that?
I won't speak for him, but I will say that I thought he was rather forthright in the way he characterized it, and I agree basically with the way he characterized it. President Obama inherited a catastrophe, a failing housing market, a collapsing automobile industry, a huge debt, 800,000 jobs lost. He inherited what George W. Bush and Dick Cheney gave him. And in the 4 years, roughly, that he's been president, he has made steady improvement. He stabilized the financial system. He saved the automobile industry. He needs another 4 years in order to make more improvements because there still are lots of improvements that need to be made, including more jobs. So let's give him 4 years rather than go to a man who is so slick that we don't even know from the primaries to now what he stands for.
Colonel Wilkerson, in the comment that John Sununu made, he said, when you look at Colin Powell, there may be some other reasons why he would support President Obama. What does this say, if anything, about the Republican Party? Isn't this getting to be somewhat of a brand of the Republican Party?
Well, on Governor Sununu's part, I think it was an unfortunate slip of words, but you're insinuating something, and you're insinuating something that is absolutely accurate. My party, unfortunately, is the bastion of those people, not all of them, but most of them, who are still basing their decisions on race. Let me just be candid. My party is full of racists. And the real reason a considerable portion of my party wants President Obama out of the White House has nothing to do with the content of his character, nothing to do with his competence as commander-in-chief and president, and everything to do with the color of his skin. And that's despicable.
What does it say about Mitt Romney to allow John Sununu to slip away with this without repercussion whatsoever?
I think it says that Mitt Romney will use any tactic whatsoever to win the White House.
All right, folks. Again, that was Ed Schultz, the Ed Schultz Show, with Colonel Wilkerson.
Wow.
He's a Republican, and he's also white, and he's being forthright about what's going down. Listen, I'm a conservative, and I never said that. I will never say there's not any racism or racist in the Republican Party, but there's racism in the Democrat Party as well. It just plays itself out differently. But, you know, it is what it is, unfortunately. I will say one other thing. I think the captain understands where I'm coming from. I would like to see more black folk speaking up front in the face of these critiques or criticisms when they come down on you're supporting a Barack Obama just because he's black. That has to be stopped. And it has to be – I don't even know how much explanation you really need to do, because it really talks about a type of arrogance. An arrogance that knows no – that has a bottomless pit. For someone to be that arrogant to call out black folk – I mean, let's really break this down, Captain. Can one measure the arrogance of a person that would critique black folk for voting for Barack Obama when – oh, man. When you're dealing with centuries of whites – voting in their own interests and voting for their own reflections. Why should you? I would say, I think there's nothing unnatural for a people to vote in this one time. They had 43 times, Captain, to vote their own reflection. The first time black folk vote in their own reflection, they're telling you, oh, that's wrong. You can't do that. What hubris. What arrogance. And black folks have voted when they were allowed to vote. They voted for white people without question. And liked one particular – well, liked a number of white presidents, when you walk into a black home, even to this day, you will see a picture of JFK right next to MLK. And when Clinton came around, we made him honorary. So something is wrong in Denmark, isn't it? How can you be that arrogant to critique? And there have been, as which was mentioned in one of the clips, we have seen other black folk vie for the presidency. It just so happens that this particular man of color measured up. We voted a black qualified person. So it's amazing that someone can critique black folk for doing what they have done. Heck, we didn't invent white-only theaters, white-only water fountains, white-only restaurants. That's not our thing. That was an infrastructural component that said, this is ours, you can't have any. This is a white thing, you can't have this. All that goes down this one time, this captain. This one time, well, you black people are just doing it because you're black. Wow. Wow. Florida, what do you think?
I'm stunned by that. But the thing is, does it really help when you have a lot of black voters who openly admit that they are just voting for Barack because he's black?
You have a point. I don't know if it helps any, but you know something? In all honesty, I don't think white folks are in a position to even they got to let that go because of the history. You're talking about 300 to 1. You're talking about 300 years to one.
That's true, but even if
black folks, you can't have it both ways. Even if you have some black folks, and be honest with you, and again, you're going to have a few anecdotal black people that are going to say this, all right? But even if they do say it, we've seen when Jesse Jackson ran and when Al Sharpton ran, they didn't get droves of black people. And also, these are black Democrats. A white Democrat still going to get 80 to 90% anyway? A white Democrat is going to get this, which is really to the detriment of black people. If a black Republican were to run, he wouldn't get 96%. So it's a little bit deeper. It's really to discount Barack Obama's his talents and his prowess. It's to discount that he's qualified. He just can't be just black. For black people, he's just not just black. That's for sure.
I personally don't think he's qualified. I personally don't think he's qualified for the job at all. I think I think he's a murderer, if you ask me, on many levels and many fronts.
Well, listen, I've heard that critique before. I know it's a Lupe Fiasco criticism. One can make that argument with anyone sitting in the White House. But as far as his qualifications, the man is a state senator. He was also a regular senator. He was also a law professor. He's more than qualified. You can't critique him for lack of qualifications and then have Bush in there for 8 years. You can't.
I'm going based off his presidency and how he completely has ignored the black community. That's what I'm going off of. And in terms of why I call him a murderer, is because to me he has advanced the Bush doctrine, and you cannot deny and say he didn't because he did. He has advanced the Bush doctrine when it comes down to foreign policy and preemptive war. Libya is a great example, so is Pakistan. I mean, this man is not somebody that deserves a second shot, in my personal opinion.
Let me take this one here.
Well, Captain, one second. Let me just make 30 seconds, and then you have it. 30 seconds. I hear what you're saying, but you can't have different standards for him and then others get away with it. If he's qualified or not qualified, he's just as qualified or unqualified as the guy before him. For someone to inherit what he has inherited, I can't see how you could say that. FDR was allowed to have four terms during his depression, but the black man gets one? Come on now. There's got to be some sense of parity. He can't dismantle, realistically. He can't dismantle what Bush created. No,
oh, yes, you can.
That.
You can.
Come on. We have a fantasy about what the presidency is. We have a fantasy.
Barack just like George W. Bush should be persecuted, sir. He's killed a lot more people overseas. Employment rate here has gone up, not down. He has tripled the size of the deficit. I mean, come on.
Captain, take it over. And I'm a Republican, Mike, talking about this. Go ahead.
Well, the reality of it, as a commander in chief, you're a commander of the military. You send the military to do exactly, in essence, what he has done. Bush has done, the president before him, and the president before him. Remember Clinton, and everyone loved, what did Clinton do when he was getting his stuff sucked off? He sent the troops over there to murder people. This is what all of these men do. Whether you're the leader of the United States, whether you're the leader of the Libya, or any of these leaders, that's what they do. They all are murderers and killers. I've said that before on this show. So that goes without saying. So in essence, what you said, that's a totally moot point. Now, when it comes to black people have not effectively gone. He's not just the president for black people. Black people have not effectively gone to the president and have told the president what he wants. What black people are looking to do is tell the president, say, this is what needs to be done for you. Now, mind you, Latin people were able to do it. The homosexual community have been able to do it and get something out of them. But at to this given date, black people have not as of yet, with all the leaders, quote-unquote leaders, that are vying for leadership, I'm this guy, I'm this guy, I'm this one, I'm that one, they have not sit together, sat down, say, let's go to the president and lean on the president and say, let's do this for black people. You know why? Because there's an identity crisis within black people. So first you have to fix that first and get Nas yourself. Then you can do for self. Then you can go to the president. Then you can turn around and say, we presented this to the president, and the president did not do that. Until that happens, you really can't hold the president to that standard. So there you have it, my friend.
Yeah, Captain, something else, too. That's a key word there, standard. We can't have different standards for this man. As far as black folks wanting certain things and having this passion, black people need to have this same level of passion with whoever sits in the White House. It seems like we are more concerned because we see a black face there that we're expecting the hookup. You should be as passionate when Bush was in there, when a Republican gets in there. Whoever sits in the White House, you need to be making demands. And you know, we saw
and they were
not with this level of passion, and not with this level of
there's no level of passion towards Barack. A lot of blacks feel as though just because Barack is black, he shouldn't touch no black issue because he's going to be labeled as a pro-black president, and then he's not going to get a second term because he's going to make whites uncomfortable. This is the argument you hear from a lot of blacks.
That is the exact argument you hear from a lot of blacks. We only got about a minute remaining, but let's keep it. Let's see what's happening here. I hear what you're saying, but I don't know if you're being realistic.
I am.
Let's be honest. What is he dealing on the black side? He's being perceived as some kind of milquetoast Negro. On the white side, he is some radical Muslim, some new age El Hajj Malik Shabazz. He is in an implausible position. When he does make one move towards some kind of black agenda or black reference, he's quickly smacked down. And if what you say is so true, why are white people are so fearful of this man getting a second term? They're saying that the end of days is going to be darkness. What are you talking about?
I'm going to say real quick that I feel as though if he get a second term, everybody's just going to agree to the heinous things that he does across seas and potentially over here. Nobody's going to oppose him. I'd truly rather Mitt Romney in office versus him, because at least Mitt Romney would have opposition if he tried to pull anything versus Barack.
Well, listen, we're going to close out, but they are fearful of a second term for some reason. And you see the racism coming out. So I don't see how he could win. Folks, Wednesday we'll pick this up again. It's been an absolute pleasure. Florida, we appreciate you coming through. Let's go on out with something different. This is Mabel John. Your good thing is about to come to an end. I hope that's not foretelling of Barack Obama, but your good thing is about to come to an end. Mabel John, coming from The Man with the Iron Fist soundtrack. See you on Wednesday.
I don't have to beg you to hold me, 'cause somebody else will. About to come to an end.
all alone. When other men said they wanted me, I didn't have to tell them I was your very own. You had all the love I've got. Even I smelt the water and get hot. Look out, your good day is about to come to an end. About to end. Getting myself back together is gonna be a big problem, I know.